How words can brainwash us.
Is it true that you can put sugar free on a product and still have sugar in it? Is probably the one question I've been asked most often, because people simply can't believe that happens.
How can it happen? William Lutz, what is doublespeak?
Doublespeak is language designed to evade responsibility, make the unpleasant appear pleasant, the unattractive appear attractive. Basically, it's language that pretends to communicate, but really doesn't. It is language designed to mislead while pretending not to.
Is it done consciously?
Oh, yes, very consciously. Doublespeak is not a slip of the tongue or a mistaken use of language. It's exactly the opposite. It is language used by people who are very intelligent and very sophisticated in the use of language and know that you can do an awful lot with language.
Who's the worst offender?
In sheer bulk?
Yes.
Sheer numbers of examples? The government. If we count government from the local level all the way up to the federal level, I had to stop writing the chapter on government doublespeak. It was going to take over the whole book. But interestingly enough, and this was a revelation in doing the book, about a half a step behind comes business with a tremendous amount of doublespeak. The chapter on food and food doublespeak. Everyone goes after that one about, is it true that you can put sugar free on a product and still have sugar in it? Is probably the one question I've been asked most often, because people simply can't believe that happens.
How can it happen?
Because sugar-free simply means they haven't added table sugar or cane sugar to it. They can add mannose, fructose, any of the syrup sweeteners, and still call it sugar-free.
So, you know, when you eat something that's sugar-free, there's sugar in it.
Oh, yes. And by the way, I found out in a radio interview when they had people in the audience calling in, a man called in and said, do you mean that there's sugar in there? I said, well, yes, there's sugars in that food. He said, well, I'm a diabetic, and my wife makes sure she buys only the sugar-free. I said, you can't eat those. You have to use only the dietetic, because that's governed by law. Sugar-free isn't. Here's a man who was threatening his health through this kind of false labeling.
But Chapter 2 is all about therapeutic misadventures, the economically non-affluent, and deep-chilled chickens, the doublespeak of everyday life. Everyday living, excuse me. What is a therapeutic misadventure?
I will tell you the incident, and then you can figure it out. In 1982, during a cesarean operation, the anesthetist turned the wrong knob and killed the mother and child. The hospital called this a therapeutic misadventure. 3 weeks ago in Los Angeles, according to the Los Angeles Times, in a series of incidents that the pathologist called incredible stupidity and incompetence, the surgeons killed the patient. It included slitting the patient's throat during surgery. This was called a therapeutic misadventure.
How about economically non-affluent?
That's what the president of the City University of New York called the poor students attending the City University. They came from economically non-affluent families.
Deep chill chickens.
Frank Perdue filed a complaint with the Department of Agriculture that his competitors were selling frozen chickens as fresh. And the Department of Agriculture investigated and said, granted the chickens are packed in ice at a temperature of 28 degrees Fahrenheit, these are not frozen chickens. These are merely deep-chilled chickens and can therefore be sold as fresh. Orwell, in his two works, his essay, Politics in the English Language, and then really giving full-blown thought to that essay in his novel 1984, addressed the importance of language in society and the control and manipulation of language to control and direct society. I think the most important point in 1984 is that power grows not out of the barrel of a gun. Power grows not out of the thought police and rule by terror. It grows out of the power of language in that novel. The revolutionary act committed by Winston Smith right at the beginning of that novel is to keep a diary. In keeping a diary, any person who keeps a diary uses language to communicate with the self. You're talking to yourself and you're thinking through words about the world around you and about how you feel. That's why a diary is such a revolutionary act in 1984, because you are reasserting personal control over language. Then at the end of the novel, to parallel that scene, when Winston Smith has been found out, and O'Brien, his torturer and guide, says to him, What is reality? Reality is not external. Reality exists not in the mind of the individual, which soon perishes, but in the mind of the party, which is collective and immortal. What the party says is reality is real. And how else can the party do that? Except by language. Party has taken control of language and has taken it away from the individual. And that's the power, because those in power who control language control the way we see the world.